Justin Aaron is a Martha's Vineyard Poet Laureate and founder and director of Nuepe Center for Literary Arts. In addition, he leads a writing workshop and retreat in Orvieto, Italy. His new collection of poems is A Machine for Remembering. And also there's an album, The War for the Valley, which we're going to get into in a second. Welcome.
Thank you.
But first, we have to say the inspiration for this entire collection came from a piano. So tell us the story of the piano, how it came into your life.
That's correct. So an acquaintance of mine, Dean Rosenthal is his name, lives, he's a composer on the Vineyard. He put an ad on social media, just not an ad, but saying that he needed a home for his family's piano because he was in between houses at the time and was wondering if anybody could take this piano. The first place he tried to house it had fallen through. And so I saw it just at the last minute. I said, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. And it ended up in our house about a week later.
And you had only one spot it would fit, right? By the staircase.
Yes.
And no one in your family plays the piano.
That's correct.
So why did you want to have this piano?
Well, I thought it would be a good way for us to learn to play the piano. My family, my grandfather was a musician and he played the piano. So I thought maybe it came through the blood and we'd be able to, someone would pick it up. I didn't know it would be me.
Yeah. All right. So what happened? Tell us about the story, how this piano led to this book and album.
I believe, as strange as this might sound, that the piano had this music in it. And I would walk by it because it was at the staircase under the stairs. And so I had to pass it between the kitchen and the library or to go upstairs. And literally the music would come one note at a time. I kind of taught myself these songs that I recorded later, about 2 years later, really just from kind of figuring out, okay, well, this note and then there's one after that. And does this sound good together? But I feel like the piano was kind of teaching me the songs that had to come from it because I do play guitar and I've written a lot of music before, but this music was different than anything I had written or even heard in my head.
It's kind of somber music. And now when you were putting the music together, did you have in your mind these refugees that were arriving on the boat to Greece? Were you thinking that when you did the music?
I was, in a way. I had already been writing for about a year and a year and a half. So I got the piano in 2016. But in 2015 is when the refugee crisis had started in Europe. And I had already been writing a lot of poetry, kind of trying to figure out how I was reacting to this, what was coming really through my news feed every day. Mm-hmm. How do I make sense of this as an artist and as a human being, what's going on? And so I was already writing quite a lot about it. But just poetry. I hadn't been writing music yet.
And your son had a brilliant idea.
Yeah, so 2 years into this project of writing the poetry and then a year of writing music all around the same theme, I was with my son. We were driving in the car. I was talking about the project. I was talking about writing, and I was feeling quite distanced from the work. And he said, Dad, you know, you're spending all this time writing about refugees. Why don't you go do something to help? And I think I realized at that point that I was afraid to go. I was afraid of the emotion. I was afraid of what I would see, of the conditions. But I think him saying that was almost like a permission for me as a father to kind of take that step. And so I found this wonderful organization named A Drop in the Ocean. They're out of Norway. And they work on the Isle of Lesvos, patrolling the beaches and assisting people who are coming ashore. And so I signed up to go volunteer with them in Greece.
How long were you there?
I was there for 2.5 weeks.
2.5 weeks. And were your fears realized? I mean, what was the experience like for you?
It wasn't as bad as I had imagined in some ways, and it was worse than I had imagined in other ways. It was a very intense experience because we would patrol all night from 11 to 7 in the morning, a stretch of beach about 10 miles. And waiting for boats to come ashore. And so there were three landings in the time that I was there. And, you know, when people come ashore, they're scared, they're tired, they're traumatized. Some people are hypothermic. And so it's an emergency situation. Mm-hmm. And the police arrive and the lawyers arrive and the doctors arrive. And it's quite chaotic and intense. And even the patrolling is intense, I think, just because you're in a heightened state of awareness. You're listening for sounds of motors. You're looking at the ocean very intently, looking for any lights or And so that was exhausting, but it was also, I think, to be able to do something during the day. The same organization served as a community center for refugees who were already brought in and housed in the refugee camp there on the island. They would come in and we would feed them and give them supplies, jackets, bottles, diapers, toothbrushes, you know, because really a lot of people arrive with nothing.
Right.
And so that was almost the opposite of the intensity of the evenings would be able to give them a place of refuge,
right,
literally,
yeah,
and to feed them.
Do you want to read one of your poems since it started with the poetry?
Sure. Let's see. So I thought this one would be appropriate because I think it not only speaks to what was going on and what is going on in Europe, but also what's going on our own border. It's called Giacometti's Figures. I begin to work from memory, three figures walking along a border at night, torches moving beyond barbed wire. I can't help them, though I try to move them. To be rid of them, I succeed only in stripping them to matchsticks standing in a rain, elongations I've made more lonely.
Some of this poetry is pretty intense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And matching with that somber mood of the... So some of the poems you wrote before you started with the music and some after your experience in Greece. So talk about how you brought the music and poetry together.
So I don't see them as that distinct, first of all, because I believe, I feel strongly that poetry is music.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as an artist, I was just trying to figure out how to express what I was feeling and seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the poetry for me did it visually, and the photographs, there are photographs mm-hmm. in this collection as well, would do this for me visually, but there's something about the sound
mm-hmm.
and being able to produce the sound, say on the piano, and then the wonderful accompaniments on the album that Nina Violet mm-hmm. did on the string arrangements and Dana Edelman did on guitar. I feel like they're able to express this deeper emotion that I couldn't mm-hmm. do visually, but you could just feel it.
Music does that to you, though, doesn't it?
Yes.
Just kind of, you know, really pulls you into that moment. So let's take a listen to The Day After. You want to say anything about that before we hear it?
The only thing I would say about it is that it is a poem that is in the collection as well, and it is transferred to a kind of lyrics for this song. A blue evening like this one, when the soldiers come. Everyone is silent at first. Then we lie about our neighbors for bread, for shoes. You do what you must. A blue evening like this one. A fat housefly taps the window. A cello sits in the corner, missing its strings. After supper, we walk by the river, under pears about to flower. Men fish from a bridge. Women gather firewood and water. Rumors of an occupation. A blue evening like this one, when the soldiers come. Forget happiness. Cheering the pears, hurling their petals at tanks in the streets.
We're talking with Justin Aaron, Martha's Vineyard Poet Laureate and founder and director of the Nuepe Center for Literary Arts. His new collection of poems is A Machine for Remembering, and the album is The War for the Valley, inspired by refugees in Greece. When you put the album together and you got the other musicians to help with this, and when you're sitting at the piano, I'm picturing you at the piano in the stairway. Is this what you envisioned as you were putting that together?
Well, some of it I heard already, but when I collaborate, one thing I cherish in the collaboration is allowing the others to do what they do and to bring their own interpretation to it. And Nina in this piece just brought an amazing interpretation on those strings. To me, that really made the entire piece.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting too, I'm going back to the piano for a minute here, because it seemed that this piano was meant to be with you for a very specific amount of time. Mm-hmm. You know, you're babysitting this piano for somebody and they're going, okay, we want it back now.
Yes.
And coincidence that that couldn't happen until you were finished with the piano? It's a very interesting story.
Yes.
It was like pouring rain one time and then the crane broke. I mean,
and the mover's back went out. The piano mover's back went out. Then ultimately, the piano, when they came to do measurements and they went back to Dean Rosenthal's house to measure the stairwell, they realized they couldn't get it in up the stairwell. And so all of these things happened, which meant from the time that the piano was supposed to leave my house until it actually left my house, there was about a 4-month period. And I didn't do too much over those 4 months except say, oh, well, the piano's going, until January of last year. It was finally going to go. And I think I realized that it was going to go. And so my friend Dana Edelman, who's a music producer and has a studio on the Vineyard, I called him up. I said, this piano's going and I got to record this music. And so my family happened to go away for a week. Dana moved in with all his equipment into our living room, and we recorded the piano right there in about a week's time.
Mm. Now, did you add the strings after the piano? So the piano was done separately?
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. We did all the piano music first and the vocals, and then we brought in the other musicians to do their work.
And who does the vocals?
I did all the vocals.
All the vocals are you? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yes. All right. So do you want to read another poem for us?
Sure. Let's see, I had one. You know, a lot of these poems, I did want to say, like the one that we heard in the music, they incorporate a lot of stories that I heard while I was in Greece. So I tried to bring those in order to, you know, the book is called A Machine for Remembering, because I do think the poetry and the music is a way to remember what is happening. It's also a way to lift these things up again, and to be with them and to maybe treat them a little differently than we did in the first go around. I'll end with something that's a little lighter, but this one is a little heavier, so we'll just do this one as well. This is another Giacometti's Figures, number 2. A body in the street, a child's naked, slender body, charred like the trunk of a tree, limbless almost to the top. People gather around, immobilized, as if in a downpour. They stand that close. They are made that thin, seeking refuge in their bodies. Belonging to what, these threads held upright, beginning to walk again, as though learning how to make it go on.
Kind of a horrifying thought, isn't it? Yeah. So you said you had some lighter stuff.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
So towards the end of the book, I think of this book as a narrative.
Is this one you were thinking of? I love this one.
Oh, yeah, that one. That would work. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think, so if you... The book I read as a narrative, it really takes place in a city that is in a war, that is in war, at war, or there's certainly violence out there, and in an apartment. And I see it as between two people. So there's a lot of intimacy and there's a lot of violence. And that was part of my goal, was to see how much I could compress the intimacy and the violence, the love and the violence, because I feel like that's what we're living, the kind of the condition we're living under in the entire world. You know, all the time we're getting all of these news stories that are just bad news, and we feel a certain way, but then we're expected still to go on and be great parents and wonderful friends and compassionate. And how do we do that? Yeah. You know, I don't know. So that was part of what I was grappling with. But yes, this is the last poem in the book. And you know, I think towards the end of the book, even though things, I won't give it away, but things are lost, there's a lot that's lost through the process There's always something hopeful. Mm-hmm. And I think the last poem ends with something hopeful. A machine for remembering. Count. The petals that have fallen from the pears, the bees loving the clover, the alleyways of women, their eyes rubbed raw, nests in the tops of winter trees, ants swarming in apple core, the planes overhead, the seconds to the thunder of bombs, gray limbs in gray rubble, the gray steps from my door, the miles of strange road traveled, dogs chained to circles of dirt, crows on electric lines, red beetles eating white lilies, stopped watches in drawers, count. Violins broken on floors, fields of violence and sadness. Men like me, who have fled their homes and their beds, and are standing in their muddy shoes by the gate with iris tubers dug before the war in their pockets, which they are waiting to replant here.
Mm. What do you hope people take away from the book and the album?
That's a great question. I think that what we're seeing all over the world, in Europe and on our own border, southern border, with people moving, I don't think it's going to go away. And so I hope we can start to think about how we're going to address the situation as a global community. And this, you know, these ideas of borders, and I don't know how we transcend these things, but I guess I just hope that they would take away. I mean, it's hard to say that you hope people will be more compassionate, but
empathetic.
Mm. But that alone is not going to solve things, really, until we. Here's the thing. I think we treat life like it's scarce, and it is fragile. But I think there's so much abundance. But we treat each other as if I have mine and you can't, you're here to take what's mine. And I do think that if we could all come together and think about all that we could have together and make together, that just multiplies what we all have, as opposed to giving somebody less or another, you know, taking from what we already have.
Mm. We're going to end the segment with 3:10 a.m. Tell us a little bit about this.
So this song is one of the first that I wrote on the piano, and it takes place in that imagined apartment between two people. It's one person really just singing a song to their beloved.
Justin Aaron is Martha's Vineyard Poet Laureate, founder and director of Nuove Center for Literary Arts. He also leads a writing workshop and retreat in Orvieto, Italy. His album is The War for the Valley, and his new collection of poems is A Machine for Remembering. Thanks so much for being here and sharing your work with us.
Oh, I thank you. I so much appreciate you having me. Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Your is 3:10. Somebody please. Alarms and sirens, twisted metal in the street, 3:10 a.m. Somebody please. A brighter future down these dark